Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel, who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? Purport. The age of quarrel is the most condemned age due to its quarrelsome features. Kali Yuga is so saturated with vicious habits that there is a great fight at the slightest misunderstanding. Those who are engaged in the pure devotional service of the Lord, who are without any desire for self-aggrandizement and who are freed from the effects of fruitive actions and dry philosophical speculations, are capable of getting out of the estrangements of this complicated age. The leaders, complicated age. It's really just the right term. Huh? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Is the bass on too much, or is the echo on, or what's going on?
The leaders of the people are very much anxious to live in peace and friendship, but they have no information of the simple method of hearing the glories of the Lord. On the contrary, such leaders are opposed to the propagation of the glories of the Lord. In other words, the foolish leaders want to completely deny the existence of the Lord. In the name of secular states, such leaders are enacting various plans every year, but by the insurmountable intricacies of the material nature of the Lord, all these plans for progress are being constantly frustrated. They have no eyes to see that their attempts at peace and friendship are failing. But here is the hint to get over the hurdle. If we want actual peace, we must open the road to understanding of the Supreme Lord and glorify Him for His virtuous activities as they are depicted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Agyanatimi Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namasreshtam Anamapi Shachiputra Matrasurupam Rupam Tasyagrashamurupurim Matarim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tamnatosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Parikamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Actually, the garland should be placed just as the speaker sits, not just at some point when you happen to remember, if you happen to remember. Sometimes the garland just sits on, just unremembered all through the class. So look at the newspaper or news on the internet. We see so many problems of this complicated age. Srila Prabhupada writes here about the leaders of the people are anxious to live in peace and friendship. Well, there's an example of how some things that Srila Prabhupada writes, they become, in due course of time, anachronistic. For instance, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport that still in India, most people, they use neem twigs for brushing their teeth. It was true when Srila Prabhupada wrote it, it's not true now. Also that the leaders of the people are anxious to live in peace and friendship, that also seems to be an anachronism. It seems that they're very anxious to live in non-peace and non-friendship, unnecessarily fomenting wars. But anyway, the solution is still the same. The solution, what is the solution? Hold a peace conference. We can all stand together and hold hands and burn a candle, or release some doves. And it goes on. The non-peace goes on. The root cause of non-peace is the lack of peacefulness in people's minds. And the solution to that is to become Krishna conscious, to hear the glories of Krishna. This system of glorifying Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam was established by Srila Prabhupada for his disciples. Of course, it's not something new. This is a traditional basic activity of all Vaishnavas, to hear the glories of Krishna. And in our sampradaya, in the Madhva sampradaya, and in the Vallabh sampradaya, specifically or particularly through the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srila Prabhupada, in this Srimad Bhagavatam, in his purports, gives much stress to the need to propagate the message of Bhagavatam, if at all there is to be peace in human society. Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abadhavatyapi namanyanantasya yashonkitani yachchinvanti gayanti gurnanti sadhavaha. Srila Prabhupada quotes this right at the beginning, even before he starts his purports. He quotes this as the reason for, and the reason for his compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam with commentary, and also to justify his lack of expertise in the English language. He said it doesn't matter, because the glories, describing the glories of the Lord, is the essence, not linguistic expertise. Although certainly Srila Prabhupada's writing brought over the essence of Krishna consciousness, often very beautiful also. So the point is to glorify Krishna. We want the whole world to take that up, but at least we should do so. Today is the first day of Julan Yatra, and that means Janmashtami is coming soon. So I thought to, for a few days, to speak directly on the topic of Krishna, because often we discuss various other issues as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam describes social and political issues. It describes the activities of various great devotees. It discusses creation and philosophical issues. For instance, when we go through in the fourth canto through the narration of Puranjan, Prachina Bahishad being instructed by Narada, there's deliberately, on Narada's part, no direct discussion of Krishna. It's bridge preaching to Prachina Bahishad, who's not ready to hear about Krishna. So he narrates to him an allegorical story about how trying to enjoy in this material world doesn't work. He tells this story to detach him from material life. But the essence of Bhagavatam is the glorification of Krishna. So I thought I'd do that directly. I came across a very nice article by one Madhva scholar who wrote a lot in English, Dr. P. Nagaraj Rao, who was a very prominent Madhva scholar. To say he's a prominent Madhva scholar, that means something, because the among all the sampradayas, the Madhva sampradaya, in particularly in the present age, is well known for producing many scholars, mostly in Sanskrit, but Dr. Nagaraj Rao wrote in English. He was based in Madras, as it was known at that time. He was very appreciative of our movement, especially of our movement's antipathy toward Mayavad. I was present in a program in which he introduced me, saying that these people, they will never tolerate any Mayavad, they'll never tolerate anything from Shankaracharya. This was the main point he liked about us. So he wrote an article in the erstwhile Madhva Sampradaya English magazine called Dharma Prakash, called Krishna Avatar, which immediately, in his first paragraph, he notes a major, or he brings out a major difference between the Madhva Sampradaya, Madhva Siddhanta, and Madhva Gaurya Siddhanta. That the Madhva Sampradaya presumes Krishna to be the eighth avatar of Vishnu. He doesn't say that we differ from the Gauriyas in this respect. It's not a polemic statement. But Madhva Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya, they consider Krishna to be the eighth avatar of Vishnu. At the same time, they glorify Krishna more than any of the avatars. They have a special fascination for Krishna, which is why, or one of the reasons why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers highlight Krishna as being the original form of the personality of Godhead, because there are transcendental qualities that Krishna manifests that Narayan doesn't manifest. When you say that the Madhva Sampradaya consider Krishna to be the eighth avatar, means the eighth avatar of Vishnu, Narayana. But because Krishna has some specialties, his lila madhuri, his pastimes are especially enchanting compared to other avatars, and a prema madhuri, his associates relate with him in a manner of love, which is more intimate and charming even than that of Narayan and his associates. Not that there's anything lacking in Narayana. We shouldn't think that there's anything lacking. But there is imperfection, there's perfection, more perfect, and the most perfect. Purna, purnatara, purnatamam. Then there is Krishna's Rupa Madhuri. His form is so enchanting. It even chants Narayana, and even chants Krishna himself. And there's his Venu Madhuri, his flute. Madhuri means sweetness. So the Krishna's sweetness surpasses Narayana, not his majesty. So if someone wants to see Vishnu as the supreme form, that's quite acceptable. It's quite according to Shastra also. But that means accepting the Supreme Lord as being supreme in terms of placing emphasis on his majesty. That because of his power and opulence and supremacy, therefore we should worship him. But the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing his power and his opulence and his majesty, they worship him for his sweetness of his personality. So, as in this article, which I'm going to be using as a loose basis for discussing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam concerning Krishna. Of course, these topics are unlimited, so we can just touch it a little bit. But even a little touch of the topics of Krishna is very pleasing and very purifying. So, Krishna is most popular. If we find all the deities in India, there are so many, among whom Vishnu and Shiva are prominent, and Vishnu is widely worshipped as Rama, as Krishna, and also as Narasimha, Matsya, Kurma, there are Varaha, there are temples of these forms of the Lord, but principally as Krishna and Rama, and as Vishnu Narayana himself, which, as I say, is widely considered to be the original form of the Lord. One of the Sri Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya, Jiyas, which means Acharya, one of my disciples told me that he had met this one of these Jiyas who was reading Prabhupada's books, and he said, actually, your Prabhupada is right. Krishna is the original form, because you see Ranganatha Swami, which is the form of the of Vishnu in the temple at Sri Rangam, which is the form of the Lord, although they're all equal, but that form has been glorified more by the Alvas, the ancient saints of the Sri Sampradaya. He said, Sri Ranganatha Swami is two-armed, not four-armed. So he took that as evidence that Prabhupada is right by promoting that Krishna is the original form. But we have no real argument. You see, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Sri Rangam and spent 4 months there at this time of year, during Chaturmas, the rainy season, that in a friendly and joking way he established to Venkata Bhatta, his host, that Krishna and not Vishnu, joking and friendly but on the basis of Shastric discussion, that Krishna and not Vishnu is the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, we shouldn't overemphasize this point, because both are non-different. Shouldn't emphasize this point while we're in this world of ourselves trying to be the controllers and the enjoyers, Ishvaroham aham bhogi, because we have to understand he is the controller, he is the enjoyer. Then when we come fully to that platform of only wanting to serve the servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna, then we may discuss more statements such as those of Raghunath Das Goswami warning not to fall down to Vaikuntha. But we're not even up there, so we shouldn't jump in too fast. So Krishna, the popularity of Krishna, he's worshipped by the class and the mass. By the class, Srila Prabhupada in the purport of the next verse, Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 17, describes the glories of the Lord. His actions, both material and spiritual, are all wonderful and contain all variegatedness. They are described nicely by such liberated souls as Srila Narada, Vyasa, Valmiki, Devala Asita, Madhva, Sri Chaitanya, Ramanuja, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, Sridhar, Vishwanath, Baladev, Bhaktivinoda, Siddhanta, Saraswati, and many other learned and self-realized souls, which of course includes also Srila Prabhupada himself. So the class, the very high-class, learned people, they all glorify Krishna. And we can also include here, although Dr. Nagaraja Rao wouldn't have agreed with that, Shankaracharya, who also glorified Krishna, who's also very learned, influential. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the appellation Acharya to him. He's not an Acharya of Bhakti, he also worshipped Krishna. He also famously instructed, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam. Poem is famous up to the present day. But like everything else in the last generation, so much of the culture has declined in India. Otherwise, we used to hear regularly this Bhajagovindam recording being played. Especially in South India. So these are just a few names. Of course, there are so many others. Dr. Nagaraj Rao also, in his essay, mentions Vedanta Deshika, which is of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, which traditionally the Madhva Sampradaya, they didn't give any credence at all to the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So there's some opening there, some opening of the mind, not as closed only in their own sampradaya, recognizing that in other sampradayas also there is appreciation and worship of Krishna. So the very high-class people, they worship Krishna, and very ordinary people, of course, among ordinary people, or apparently ordinary people, the gopis of Vrindavan are most prominent. They're not ordinary, but they appear to be ordinary. And up to the present day, Srila Prabhupada noted, although things have changed a lot since Prabhupada wrote that up to the present day, the ordinary people in India, they like to recite the glories of Krishna, just as the gopis of Vrindavan, when Krishna was present, then the women in the village, they're churning the butter. It takes quite a long time to do, maybe an hour or so, 45 minutes, 1 hour. And while doing that, they'll sing the glories of Krishna. A farmer in the field, all illiterate people, mostly illiterate. The farmer in the fields will sing the glories of Krishna, the boatman rowing his boat. But nowadays, no one churns butter. They buy buttermilk in a packet. No one plows the fields with their cows. They have tractors. Well, still the plowing is going on, not with cows, with bullocks. And for crossing the river, the rowing is out of fashion. They're diesel engines which make so much noise you can hardly hear yourself talk, what to speak of singing the glories of Krishna. And people are reading the newspapers and watching TV, but that culture has in a short time has to a large extent died. But that was the great endeavor and desire of Srila Prabhupada to revive that culture. It's a whole great culture centered on glorifying Krishna. So that was all wrapped up with Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram endeavor. So, very high class people, very ordinary people, they can all come together in the worship of Krishna. And they're so, apart from directly the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many huge body of literature, both prose and poetry, glorifying Krishna, discussing philosophy, establishing philosophically Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our own Sampradaya, we have the writings, first of all, of the six Goswamis. They wrote both philosophical and descriptive works of Krishna, describing Krishna's beauty, describing Krishna's pastimes. That was tradition was carried on and is still going on. some great scholars wrote for other scholars, and others wrote for the masses, so that they could have access to the essential teachings of Krishna consciousness. Narottam Das Thakur was outstanding in this regard, even though he was a shiksha disciple of Jiva Goswami and was therefore deeply learned in all the conclusions of devotional service. Nevertheless, his writings are in simple Bengali to make those conclusions available to the ordinary people. So in the scholars writing in Sanskrit, Narottam Das wrote in vernacular Bengali, and in all the major vernacular languages of India, with the probable exception of Urdu, which is anyway an imported, well, it's a mixed up language. There is glorification of Krishna. Now also a major language of India is English, and also glorification of Krishna is going on in that language. But there's much literature in all the major vernacular languages of India glorifying Krishna. It's very deeply in the culture. And even so many poems, songs, so much is written. Much of it is not well known, much of it is not even extant anymore. In those days, writing means writing on a palm leaf, and then someone might copy that, and there might be someone, what someone wrote might be only, it might be only just someone writes and shares with his friends, that's all. Might be never published, maybe a jewel of realization of Krishna consciousness. But the point is that Krishna is being glorified. People thought to glorify Krishna. What else to do with our time and our energy but to glorify Krishna? Krishna is glorified for his pastimes in Vrindavan, and also there is much glorification of Krishna as the Vasudeva, Krishna, outside Vrindavan, in Mathura, and especially his pastimes in Dwarka. He performed many pastimes. He's the central figure in the Mahabharata. That becomes clear from the statements of Dhaumya to the Pandavas. It might seem that the Pandavas are the central figures. Of course, they don't come until quite a few ages have passed. But then they become apparently the central figures. But then Dhaumya, their family priest, told them that you should know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then everything comes into perspective from that. He's a central figure by which the Pandavas were able to win the war, both directly and indirectly. In Bhagavad Gita, he told Arjuna that anyway, I desire victory for you, so anyway, you're going to win. It's all being done by me. And nimitta matram bhava savyasachin, you simply become an instrument in this. But even directly, Krishna, by his intervention, for instance, how he arranged for Bhishma Pitama to be shot down by Arjuna, taking advantage of the fact that Bhishma, he had said, I'm not going to shoot at a woman, because in the previous life, this Amba, she, who wanted to marry him and he wouldn't marry her, then he became a woman. What's the name? Shikandi. So Bhishma wouldn't fight, and Arjuna came behind and peppered Bhishma with so many arrows that he fell down and was unable to fight. And in the killing of Drona, also Krishna by underhand means, in the killing of Duryodhana. So without this, the Pandavas wouldn't have been able to be successful. So Krishna, he is the central figure, and he's the life of the Pandavas. He is their worshipable master, and also he acts as their friend, as their messenger. The messenger is not... Who is a messenger? It's not a very major person is sent as a messenger, because often the messengers, they get their heads cut off. So you don't want to send your most prominent people as a messenger. If you're a messenger to sue for peace with enemies, so that saying comes, don't kill the messenger, because it happens. But Krishna went performing that menial service, the menial service of becoming the charioteer of Arjuna. The enormity of that is brought out by the Pandavas always referring, as Arjuna also does in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna speaks to Karna as Sutaputra, the son of a charioteer. Because the position of a charioteer is socially a very low position. So, but Krishna took that to be in the battle without fighting. Then again, another name, a famous name of Krishna is, what is it? Sarangapani. No, not Sarangapani. The Chakra. I don't remember it now. I was saying it's a famous name and I don't remember it. The Ratangapani. He takes the chariot wheel in his hand to attack Bhishma, even though he had vowed not to take up any weapon in the fight. So that name becomes famous for his breaking his vow to protect his devotee. So it's a vast topic. Krishna in Mahabharata. Krishna is the, particularly the pastimes of Krishna, they are the subject matter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the topmost Vedic literature. It is the essence of all the Vedas, sarva vede itihasanam saram saram hiyodharitam. It is the extracted essence of the essence of all the Vedas, and the itihasas, the histories, which means principally Mahabharata, Ramayana and Mahabharata. So the essence of all that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. The 10th canto is the essence of the Bhagavatam. It takes up, in terms of numbers in terms of content, it takes up about one third of the whole Bhagavatam and is dedicated to Krishna. the espousers of Vedanta, they find the perfection in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta. So it's not that just that Srimad Bhagavatam is just some stories or leela for less intelligent people, as some people who think themselves highly intelligent but are actually not very intelligent, they suppose that Srimad Bhagavatam is just some stories, but it's actually replete with the highest philosophy. It's the describes the philosophy of the Vedanta and gives the conclusion of Krishna, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Yeah, he gives some names here of great persons, of great acharyas who have glorified Krishna. And in the various rasas, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through Rupa Goswami, exposed or delivered, discovered, you could say, the rasa theory as applied to bhakti. This is central to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, that Krishna is rasa raja. And particularly that worship of Krishna in Vrindavan, that is supreme because of the sweetness, madhurya rasa. mostly the previous acharyas, they worshipped Krishna in dasya rasa or vatsalya rasa, and may have been some in sakya rasa, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught to worship Krishna in the mood of a lover and in separation. So this is described in Bhagavatam, but not brought to prominence or until Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, prior to that, there was also Jayadev Goswami with his Gita Govinda, which discussed this topic. This poem is the discussing of one of the Rasa Leela, Krishna's leaving the Rasa Leela and coming back. But in an although that Jayadev's Gita Govinda is central to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's relishing of Krishna Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought out the significance and the nuances of that, and broadcast that very widely. Otherwise, even without going very deeply into that madhurya, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed to be madhurya rasa, even then the other sampradayas, they were relishing the great sweetness of Krishna as compared to the various other avatars. The sweetness of Krishna in his childhood pastimes, especially. but even apart from it, just like the activity, the Mahabharata, how that is described, there are many writings about his activities, winning Rukmini. So it's not that Krishna's beauty and his pastimes, their sweetness is confined to Vrindavan and the gopis, the young girl gopis, but that is relished. The great sweetness of that is relished in other sampradayas, even though they haven't magnified, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, the sweetness of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes with his loving pastimes with his cowherd girlfriends, although others they glorify Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, his childhood pastimes. So with all the acharyas of various sampradayas, they all agree that hearing of Krishna is most auspicious, as mentioned in this verse, is most purifying. Vyasadeva himself, we learn from the Bhagavatam, written by Vyasadeva himself, that Vyasadeva himself, even after compiling all the collecting and editing all the Vedas and personally composing the Mahabharata and the Vedanta Sutra, after this tremendous effort, he was still feeling unsatisfied. And at this point in time, we may wonder, well, how is that so? Because Krishna is described throughout the Vedic literatures, Vede, Ramayana, Chaiva, Purane Bharate Tata Adavante Cha Madhe Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. In all the Vedic literature, including the Upanishads, in the Vedanta Sutras, in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, from beginning to end and in the middle, only Hari is glorified. But that is not directly in many ways, but even there is so much here and there that we may wonder, well, how is it that Vyasadeva was dissatisfied? But there was no one treatise in which it is specifically established that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the glories of his pastimes. So now we have Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand. And especially as we have Srimad Bhagavatam with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's explanations, so we can understand all those literatures in perspective. Otherwise, there's great possibility of not understanding that all the Shastra is meant for glorifying Krishna. So Vyasa himself became fully satisfied in glorifying Krishna directly in Srimad Bhagavatam. There have been so many scholars who are different scholars. Some are trying to vilify Krishna, some are trying to defend Krishna. There are those scholars who will say that, well, we don't like to repeat all these things, but I won't go into it in depth. But how they say, well, there was no such person as Krishna, it's just some imagination, because the people of India kept cows, so they imagined that their god kept cows. If they'd been pig keepers and they'd had a pig keeper god, this imaginary ideas or that, Krishna was some village god, some local tribal god, who got his identity became merged with that of the ancient Vedic Vishnu, as so many speculations. But the real scholars, they establish Krishna by Shastra, and even they want to do now, but now this whole science of archaeology has come up, digging up bones like dogs, and trying to make some conclusions from it. So, actually, in Sri Rangam again, there's one scholar who's made a 7-volume encyclopedia on the history of Sri Rangam, using both from literary sources and from the kind of things that archaeologists get into by examining inscriptions and so on. So, in this way, the bona fide scholar. There's another Dr. Rao, whose full name I don't remember, who headed up the project to investigate the underwater Dwaraka, which gives credence to the, for those who believe in pratyaksha, we believe what we see and nothing else. So he did a lot of research showing that there is an underwater, ancient underwater city at the site of Dwarka as described in Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam and other shastras. I also had the good fortune to meet him once. So in various ways, the scholars, this will go on. There will be scholars who are decrying Krishna, and there are scholars who are glorifying Krishna. So this will go on. We happily learn from Srila Prabhupada to glorify Krishna, which is purifying. There are others who may talk about Krishna, but the purification, that also takes place, but in a very roundabout way. Just by the fact that they meditate on Krishna, that's good for them, even if they do so in an inimical manner. But that is not recommended. That is not good to hate Krishna. Because if you hate Krishna, you go to hell. And Krishna's not pleased. That's the real reason. Krishna doesn't like us to hate him. But he's so kind that if anyone thinks of him in any way, then Krishna eventually gives him some mercy, although one may have to suffer. And worse still, by such vilification of Krishna, others become affected, and they also, then their spiritual life goes backwards. In fact, just like Shishupal was vilifying Krishna, so some of the things he said, from the objective viewpoint, some things he said were true. For instance, he said, "Who is this Krishna? He was a cowherd boy, and which is a very low social position. And then he pops up as a prince. And what's this? How can you just jump from being a cowherd boy to a prince?" We're not really sure what his background is. Some people say he's the son of Nanda and Yashoda. Some people say he's the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He's just some kind of upstart. So from the objective point of view, what he said could be taken as correct. And of course the acharyas have analyzed that indirectly Shishupal was glorifying Krishna. Because it is a fact that Krishna, he's not describable in terms of any mundane caste or position or any such thing. Krishna, he is beyond any, he doesn't belong to any family or position. That's, of course, in terms of Leela he does, but ontologically as the personality of Godhead, he's beyond such considerations. So similarly, objectively speaking, there may be so many things to blame about devotees of Krishna. And if someone wanted to, and we're definitely not going to take that up, they could find so many faults with Srila Prabhupada, because Krishna can give you the intelligence to do so if you want to. But we should not do so. We may find so many faults even in those who are following Srila Prabhupada, but Krishna warns us, apichet sudara charo bhajate mamananya bhak sadhureva samantavya samyagvya vasito hi saha. That if a devotee is actually sincere to serve Krishna, then, even if they do many wrong things, they should be considered a sadhu. So, we can take a warning from the mundane scholars who are trying to see everything very objectively, that we should see what is the endeavor to serve Krishna. that one good quality negates millions, billions, zillions of negative qualities. Of course, while living in this world, those who are taking the role of teachers, acharyas, they should act in an ideal manner to instruct others. But if they slip from that, they are protected by Krishna, which is one of the another of the great glories of Krishna, which his glories are unlimited. So we're not going to try and give the definitive summation of Krishna's glories, because there is no end to that. It's the outline is given in four chapters of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu summarizes to Sanatan Goswami, the glories of Krishna, the opulence of Krishna, and then he goes on to describe the sweetness of Krishna. So that's a framework in those four chapters, which covers the whole subject of Krishna. But there's no end to his glories. So we should hear from the devotees, not from the non-devotees. That's the sum and substance. The glories of Krishna are to be heard from devotees. We shouldn't hear from persons who doubt Krishna, who are envious of Krishna, who don't really know anything about Krishna, or who are apparently glorifying Krishna, but not really. They may glorify Krishna and then themselves declare themselves to be Krishna. So we shouldn't hear from such persons. Also from Mayavadis. I've many times related this experience that I had. This was in 1989 at the Ardha Kumbh Mela, the half Kumbh Mela at Tirtharaj Prayag, Allahabad. So we had our ISKCON camp there. And in the evening, there were so many camps, of course, so many Hindu organizations. So one evening, I wandered around the camps just to have a look. It's North Indian Hinduism all there in one spot. So one huge pandal, there was one Shankaracharya speaking. And I listened to about 10 minutes of his lecture. And then the lecture came to an end. So in the lecture, the part of it I heard, he was glorifying Krishna, his pastimes, how he saved Draupadi. And I thought, this is very nice. There's thousands of people sitting there and listening. I thought, well, what's wrong? Nothing wrong. This is very nice. But then he finished his lecture by saying, "And you should all understand that you and he are the same. You're all God." So it sounded very nice. It was like feeding someone with a nice meal and saying, "And now I'd just like to give you little drop of cyanide, potassium cyanide. It's not much, just a little bit, but it spoils everything else that was given before and kills you." So we should hear from proper devotees about Krishna. And in this way, we can make our life perfect. I plan to continue this tomorrow and for the next few days. I'll finish now. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yes, please. Sorry, could you please say that again? Srila Vyasadeva?
Since he's the compiler of the Vedas, he's given Srila Bhagavatam, why is it not more widely accepted by
these
scholars?
Why is the Srimad Bhagavatam not more widely accepted by the scholars if Vyasadeva himself gave the Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, there are various reasons for that. scholars, I presume you are presuming that a scholar should be objective. If he studies the evidence, and then he should accept it. But unfortunately, it's not like that. People bring their biases to whatever subject they are studying. Even in science, as was famously highlighted by the later part of the 20th century, he was actually writing a history of science, Thomas Kuhn, who wrote that in a very influential book, wrote that scientists are not so objective. They bring their biases with them. So when they're looking at evidence, they already have in their mind a framework to interpret it, which means they're not fully objective. The nature of scientific revolutions, he said, that you can have all the evidence about something, but scientists won't accept it if they don't want to, they don't believe in it. He said that even with good evidence which shows the old theories are wrong, the older people who have been living it and teaching it all their life, they'll never accept it. And it's only when the old professors die out that the new theory can become accepted. So that's even in science, what to speak of Shastric interpretation, which... some measure of object in discussion, we find, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussing with the Mayavadis, some objectivity is meant to be there. Yeah, there are rules for discussion. This question came up. Prataparudra Maharaj, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he asked Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I'm just trying to remember the Bengali. He asked him that Shastra Pramane Chaitanya Hon Krishna Kene Pandit Shakal Tahate Vitrishna. It's probably not exactly the right Bengali, but it gives the purpose. The Shastra Praman, the evidence of Shastra, is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. Then why is it that the pundits, the learned persons, are not attracted to him? So in reply, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he quoted to Maharaj Prataparudra the very verse that his brother-in-law Gopinatha Acharya had quoted to him, to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, before Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had discussed with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sarvabhauma was a Mayavadi at the time. So the verse is, Atapite deva padambuja dvayam prasadale shanu grihita eva hi janati tatvang bhagavang smahim no nachanya ekopi chirang vichinvan, which means that it's a prayer of Lord Brahma to Krishna found in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, that without a drop of your mercy, then even great learned persons, they cannot accept or understand the glories of your lotus feet. Even though they may study shastras for millions of lives, without that mercy, they'll never understand. So Krishna reciprocates with the desires. And so, people who are attracted to Krishna in his majestic form, they will prefer just like the Vishnu Purana. Ramanuja, he emphasizes the Vishnu Purana, which presents Vishnu as supreme and Krishna as an avatar. So some people say, well, anyway, that's another discussion. There's so many discussions, I won't get into that now. So that is the answer to that. And it could be answered from various other perspectives also. Yeah. All right then, anything else? Hare Krishna. Jai Radha Govinda. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.